Well, again, everybody, and welcome back to the late or afternoon, I guess, edition of the Trick Podcast. So Joe here with my ghost of Bell on this Saturday, July 13th, 2019. This is the second episode that I record today. I did one this morning, and then this one came to mind just over the last few hours, and it's been kind of, I guess, formulating in my mind for many years, calling it my story, or maybe my experience with prejudice and racism in the U.S. of A. My story of prejudice and racism in the U.S. of A. So, as you can imagine, this topic can be very controversial, but I guess I want to say a few things. First of all, this is my experience. This is truly what I've experienced here in this country. Second, I love this country, so I would rather experience that here than experience that in my hometown. I love my home country, but I am so thankful to be here. And third, this is not some blame on every person or on some race or on anything like that. This is just simply my experience with people. And I'm not going to obviously go through the names of people or mention names or any of that, but I just want to express my story. And then lastly, I want to tell you that I forgive all the people that have been prejudiced or have expressed hurtful things towards myself. And because ultimately, Jesus is my example. And Jesus on the cross, he himself said, "Forgive them, for they do not know what they do." So that is my story, and that's how I want to preface all this. So let me first tell you about, one last thing. The reason why I'm doing this is to document my life story, as well as to give voice and a platform perhaps for other people, maybe my age or younger, older, that have been through similar things but have been maybe scared or unwilling, unable to even put into words their experiences. So let me start by saying that my biggest, greatest hero is, besides Jesus and my parents, is my grandmother. My grandmother experienced tons of racism and prejudice, but no one knew about it. I got glimpses of it here and there as a young boy that grew up with her. My grandma cleaned homes for 40, 50 years. In a day when housekeepers had no rights, there were no cars with the logo or the Instagram account of your business. There was no Facebook, and so anything that was good or bad would mostly go unnoticed by everyone. And so I would get glimpses at times of my grandma's pain, because at the end of her life, I think she had a knee surgery, and she asked her employers for some help with health insurance, and they gave her $50. This is a family that she had cleaned their house for almost 50 years. And so, and then she told other stories of people, there were two families that she mostly worked for, these two families blaming her of things being stolen and how that would cause such panic for her. As an immigrant, she was a U.S. citizen, so all this prejudice these days about illegal aliens and all this stuff, really, you know, racism is racism. And so she experienced a ton of stuff, and I don't want to be like her, meaning in that no one knew her pain. I want to tell my story so that, as I said, you can hopefully learn from what I've gone through, that I can be honest with myself and to record the things that have happened to me, that continue to happen to me, that will happen to me again, and probably to you as well if you are also someone of color, and to be an example. Now, maybe one last thing that I want to say is that I cannot even begin to relate to the African-American story and plight in this country. So I am in no means trying to compare or even to say that my story or my pain is greater or less than the African-American story of racism. All I can say is document my story as a Hispanic man, as an immigrant from Nicaragua who grew up in Long Beach, California since 1978 when I was 9 years old, and tell you kind of what I have experienced not all of it has been bad, but the bad things need to be told in order to give hope and context to future generations and to be an example of forgiveness. So I think the first time that I experienced what I would call blatant racism was when I was already married to my lovely wife, who you might know, she's white. And so we went to a surf shop in Huntington Beach here in the area. And I talked to the guy. I was maybe 25, 26, young man. Walked in with my wife, and I maybe said to the young person, maybe he was a little older than me, I don't know. And I said, oh, can I look at this sticker here? And I interacted with him just for a few seconds there, as you do. And the whole time, he wouldn't look at me. He would only look at Rochelle. And I didn't really catch the drift. I noticed it. But my wife, to her credit, and I love my wife, she picked it up right away because she's an anthropology major. She has studied racism and cultural things, and anthropology is a study of cultures. Of course, she's married to me, so she's hypersensitive to racism and prejudice and mocking and bullying and that kind of thing. And so I think as we walked out, she said, did you notice that? And I said, you know, I did. And so we talked about it. So that was the first time that I maybe framed that moment as prejudice and racism. Then I would say maybe another time was maybe right after that or right around that time. I was in my staff. I was actually talking to some of the pastors at my church at the time, and I had a Dodger jacket on. I love the Dodgers. And this church was mostly white, and the staff was 100% white. I was the token kind of brown person. And for the most part, I have blended in American culture, American white culture. I've blended in most white suburban churches, which are the ones that I've mostly worked at. But this particular time, I broke, let's just say, the code of ethics, and I wore a Dodger jacket, which, of course, you know, it's very stereotypical of a Hispanic man who loves the Dodgers, right? Very stereotypical. And so I was coming out of my office, and all the other pastors were there, and the mocking was just abusive. All of the comparisons to Fernando Valenzuela, to Mexicans, to Hispanics and Dodgers, and it wasn't even like what it is now where you have Los Dodgers and it's sort of a celebration of things, right? It was more of an outward laughing at me being Hispanic, me being a Latino man. And as much as I can understand, and my wife and I are both very understanding and forgiving of, I would say, most things that have happened to us. As I said, I want to record and document these things because they are what they are. And for the most part, I have been silent about all of these things, excusing them. But the pain inside my heart has been so deep, and the wounding that has happened, especially like a domestic violence victim or like a sexual victim, when you stay silent or when a rape victim doesn't talk about it, these things are only suppressed. You only stuff them down. And eventually they come out. And I think my anxiety and a lot of these things, even that I experience to this day, they are in a big part because of some of these events, as well as just the overall kind of a fear of immigration and of deportation and some of those things. So that was a second time. There have been many others. I would say the church has been probably the most painful experience for me in terms of racism, because I've always worked at white churches and I have loved them, have given my whole heart. They have provided for me as well what I deserved in terms of payment and respect and position. I've never cheated or done no work for money. I've always worked 10 times what I was getting paid. That's just how my grandma taught me to do things, and that's just who I am. But I would say that the church has been the biggest culprit in this attitude of racism and prejudice and bullying. Maybe another experience that I can recall is at this same church that I was at. I was there for a long time. The people who would run sound for me, I was a musician, as you know, they would constantly speak prejudice comments towards me behind my back, with each other, mocking me, laughing at me. Treating me as less than the other pastors, even though I was probably the most successful pastor and I had the most successful ministry at this church that was growing in many ways because of what I was doing. But for who knows what reasons, jealousy, envy, hate, racism, Satan, life experiences, whatever, just stupidity, I experienced high levels of prejudice and hate and jealousy and envy from this particular church. Especially, I remember this one time, there was this man who was maybe twice my age who walked in one day in the middle of, I guess it was one of the worship services that I was leading, and he had a pen and a paper out. And I asked him, "Hey, Scott, what's going on?" He's like, "I'm just taking notes because I want to put a complaint about you." And it was all just musical stuff, like all the things that I was doing wrong. And guess what? He wanted my job. And so most of the time, this racism and prejudice, I believe, comes from jealousy that someone like me that is gifted and talented and just bilingual and completely basically I can impress, and that's not the right word. I am a valuable man no matter who's in front of me. This man had deep, deep jealousy of me. Sorry about the noise, by the way, in the background. My family is having a good time back there. But the point is that I've experienced that jealousy and that hate firsthand for many years, 10, 20, 30 years. As long as I've been in the church, this has been an issue. And I have never told my story. I've always sort of stuffed it down, but this is a reality. And I won't tell you even about what happened this week, because this continues. And this needs to stop. And I need to be telling my story. Then I went to a Chinese church about 6 years ago. Well, let me actually say something. Before this particular Chinese church, I was at another church in downtown LA, and that was actually the most redeeming experience I've ever had. It was, ironically, a very liberal church. I'm not a liberal, but it was a gay-affirming church with a gay pastor, and I learned a lot from this man, a white man who was gay, highly educated with a master's degree in theology, an incredible wise man, a wonderful preacher, wonderful human being. He was in a celibate relationship, from what I understand. And so what I learned from him, from Frank, is the compassion towards the least of these. He mostly worked with immigrants who were also gay, and who some of them were even, you know, they had an illness and they were undocumented. So it was a triple whammy, maybe even the fourth whammy. They were poor and homeless. They were Hispanic. They were immigrants. Well, I guess that's the same thing as Hispanics. They were LGBTQ, and they were undocumented. I don't know if I have all four there, but it was like Jesus working among lepers. It was like Mother Teresa working among lepers in Calcutta. This man, Frank, showed me such compassion as an educated white man who could easily have been in a huge church in Pasadena, a church of 3,000, very eloquent, very intelligent man. But he chose to be among the least of these. And it had its problems theologically as well as discipleship and gospel. I definitely had a different view on what he was doing. But as far as me being a man of color, there was zero hint of racism, and that's to the credit of the liberal church. This was a Methodist Presbyterian church. Most of my prejudice and racist problems have been in conservative white churches, Baptist and independent and so forth. Now, after that, or no, before that, we had been in Colorado, my wife and I, and that was pretty bad as far as racism. In our neighborhood, people would call the cops on us because for the first month I didn't mow my lawn. We would get comments, mocking comments about me being a soccer player. While I was on a run many times, people would go on the opposite side of the street when they would see me coming towards them. When my wife and I would walk down 16th Street, the 16th Street Mall there in Denver, we got many, many racist and prejudiced looks because we were a bicultural couple. I remember one of our staff members talking about how in some states, bicultural or biracial couples were illegal. And he told me this in the middle of a meeting, almost like telling me that I should be lucky that in Colorado that wasn't the case. It was a very aggressive and very, very violent statement that he made. So Colorado was probably the worst, I would say, as far as prejudice and racism. And what the immigrant learns to do is to ignore these things and to not talk about them. And yet inside of us, we are deeply wounded because we are giving out of love, especially as Christians, right? We're loving the church, we're loving the people, and yet the amount of hate and prejudice coming back at you, it's irreconcilable. You cannot make sense of it. You're wondering, how can this be fair? I am giving you so much, and yet because of the color of my skin or because of the way I am or a Dodger jacket or because my wife is white and I'm not, you are judging me to such depth. And so that you can only stuff that, forgive it, let it go. And so that's what we've done for the most part. There are so many examples like that. Just in the last few years, the church where I'm at, we had a leader in the church tell my daughter that, I forget exactly what they said, something about you're mixed or is your dad documented? I don't know exactly the phrase. I tend to want to forget these horrible things that people say. But they told that to our daughters, I think to maybe all three of our kids, something extremely blatantly racist. And I know because when we got home, our kids told us how shocking that was to hear at the church from a church leader. And yet this is just normal. This is just what happens in churches. And this is the kind of stuff that goes on and it goes unchecked. Nobody talks about it. And it just continues to kill the souls of people and the spirit of God in churches. And that's why I believe this church and many churches have been in decline, is because of the kind of blatant sin, racism, and hate that exists in a lot of people. Not everyone, but this is, again, my story. So now to the credit of this person, he, by the Holy Spirit, he came to my office the next day. I think it was that Monday or Tuesday, and he cried and he apologized for his racist remarks, and I forgave him. I guess maybe let me fast forward to just this week. I was in a meeting and we were talking about Jesus's example on the cross and how he was mocked, and yet he didn't strike back, he didn't say anything, and we were talking about bullying and talking about our own experiences. And so I mentioned the experience at the surf shop, and this one girl, instead of her saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, Trick," she said, "You know, I kind of felt the same way when I first met you." And I thought, what the heck are you going to say? Where are you going with this? And she just kept going on and on about my big nose, my thick glasses, my dark complexion. Then another person that was in there also said, "You know, I kind of felt the same way too. Like, are you Native American? Like, what are you?" And it crossed the line from just observation to giving permission to their racist remarks. We were talking about Rodney King and about all these things, and kind of like, well, maybe that was because, you know, Rodney King was on PCP. And so it had this tenor of basically he had it coming. And maybe me, because I look the way I look, I had it coming that this person thought these things about me and felt free to tell me that, even though the whole class was about how mocking is so horrible. And we were all sharing our personal stories. It would be as if someone said to me, "Oh yeah, you know, I was bullied in school when people would tell me that I was fat." And then imagine if I would say to you, "You know, I've kind of thought the same thing. I have kind of thought that you're a little overweight." Imagine if you heard me say that. I mean, how wounding that would be. Or perhaps if you would say that, "Yeah, you know, when I was young, I had a lot of acne on my face, but I worked it out and now I have better skin." But then imagine if I was responding to you and said, "You know, oh, that's why your skin looks the way it looks." I mean, imagine how that would make you feel, right? This is exactly what happened to me just this week. And I didn't call it out. I played it off and just kind of, let it go. But the pain, it was so common to me. I have been through things like that hundreds of times that, If anything, this is part of the victim mentality. I felt so sick to my stomach that I didn't just speak up and say, please stop, like, stop talking. Like, you are wrong. Like, what you're saying is horrible. And so instead, it just kind of kept going. And then I think another common experience that I go through pretty much every week, especially with older white males in this particular church, is the constant threatening of my job and a threatening over how much money I make, because these leaders know, they've been in church leadership and they know my salary, which in and of itself should be illegal to even mention those things in public, right? There should be some vow of secrecy. It would be as if I was a therapist and I would go around saying, oh yeah, let's say a Joe, you know, like we talked about last week about your drinking problem. I mean, I should be put in jail, right? Or my license should be taken away if I was to talk that way publicly about a private client. Well, that's exactly what these leaders do. They talk in public about not a number, but about the comment, oh, because of all that money you make. And then I remember even just, I don't know, a few weeks ago, one of these church leaders said to me, oh yeah, well, there was this picture on the wall of this boat. And I think it was Jesus who was in the boat. And it's the classic scene in the Gospels where Jesus tells Peter to come out of the boat and he sings and then Jesus rescues him. So I just kind of made a comment about, oh, look at this picture. Maybe we can replace this picture. And this person said, or we can just ship you out and put you on the boat and ship you out of the church. And, you know, most of the time I just laugh that off. And, you know, it's generational stuff and older people, they talk this way all the time, but it's not funny to me. And especially because I've heard this same comment from the same people at least 100 times about my job, about my how much money I make. I'm a pastor, so trust me, I'm not making anything crazy. Just imagine, put yourself in my shoes. Imagine your boss at your work. Maybe it's who you work at. I don't know. You work as you're a teacher. Imagine that your boss, your principal, in a staff meeting would say, oh yeah, Betty, you know, after all that money that you make, you know, I would expect that you would drive a better car. I mean, you would probably file a formal complaint against that employer, which is what I should do. And so this is my attempt at just calling a spade a spade. And again, there's forgiveness. I forgive most of these things. Some of them are still pretty fresh. Some of them have happened years ago. But this is what happens. This is the kind of stuff that goes unchecked, that goes on. And racism in the U.S. of A., really just in humanity. Let me just be clear. This is not a thing of USA or black versus white. This is just human. This is just sin. This kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, I also got an email from another person about illegal aliens being hung. And it was sort of like a joke, I guess. And by mistake, I got this email in this kind of group chat or something. And I immediately replied back and said, this is disgusting. And the person apologized. So, you know, this kind of stuff happens, right? I mean, you have been either a victim or hopefully not a part of it, but you've been victimized by things like this, things that are said online, on Facebook, in public, by your friends, your family. And as I said, we tend to excuse these things. So us older generation, or they grew up in the South, but sin is sin. Prejudice is prejudice. Bullying is bullying. And even though I'm 50 years old, doesn't mean that I need to just not talk about these things, because they are hurtful to me, my wife, and our kids. But I forgive. I forgive these individuals. I have no hatred in my heart. But what I do have is I have this microphone, and I don't want to be silent, because there could be some kid or some person just like me, or younger or older, who's been through similar things, who's going through similar things, and nobody knows what's going on. You might be someone in an office. You might be someone at work. Maybe you do clean homes, or you work construction, or maybe you're an executive, and you're dealing with this kind of stuff every day, and nobody knows, and you don't even know what to do about it. But your heart is torn, and you feel angry as hell, and you don't know what to do about it. I just want to give you, first, I want to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what's happened to you. You don't deserve that. That is not what should happen to you. It is wrong. It is evil. It is satanic. And you need to stand against it in the power of the blood of Jesus. And for people who do this, I forgive you. And may the Lord heal you from this disease of sin and of prejudice and of hate. And may he heal you. And may my voice of reason, of eloquence, and of humility be a part of your healing. I'll end with this. I was telling Rochelle all of these things just the other day, and she told me of, I don't know if it was American Gangster, but it was one of the movies with Denzel when he's being whipped because of, I don't know, him being black. And they had him take off his shirt, and I don't know who it was just whipping him. And all along, with tears in his eye, Denzel was looking at his betrayers, at his punishers, and just with a face of, you're not going to destroy me. You're not going to take away my spirit. You can kill my body, but you cannot kill my soul. We will not be shaken. And that is exactly how I feel. And both Rochelle and I made a commitment to, no matter what happens, no matter what happens from here on out, no matter what has happened in the past, we will not be shaken. We forgive. We love those who have hurt us, like Jesus calls us to do. Just like he said, forgive those who have hurt you. Forgive those who have sinned against us. As we also need to ask for forgiveness for the times that I have sinned against other people. And so that is part of what we're learning to do. This is part of what we're learning to grow through, both Rochelle and I and our kids. And our lives are, trust me, are blessed. I mean, we don't live in this thing of racism daily. I mean, our heroes are Jesus, Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, all these, my grandmother, my mom, all these amazing human beings that have loved us. And I would say I have thousands of stories of people who have loved us, who have been there for us, who have cared for us, who have treated us kindly. I can think of at least 10 people right now that have only loved us deeply and genuinely from the heart from day one, who have worked through maybe whatever prejudice maybe was in their lives, and who now accept us and love us as the people of God that we are. And that is my hope for everyone. I pray for myself all the time. I pray for you, pray for my kids. But these things must be said. I will not be silent anymore, because I want to heal myself, and I want to heal you or whoever, the listener or whoever, of these sins, and to be able to move past these things and to live in the freedom of Christ. Because where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Though there's pain in the night and racism and prejudice in the night, ghost comes in the morning. And to, if you are an African-American person, or maybe you're African, or you're of dark complexion, I want to say to you that I understand. I am sorry. I hurt with you. I feel with you. Let's come together to forgive, to speak, to tell our stories, to use microphones, videos, art, prayers, to use poetry, to use any means to express, not hate, but to express our story of pain and of survival, and also to forgive. At the end of the day, my purpose in all of this is to forgive, is to love, and it's to move on so that we can all be one. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The David Trigg Show. Find the complete archive at davidtrigg.com or subscribe for free through the podcast app on iTunes or Stitcher on Android.
Each week, we bring you a message of joy, success, and personal power in spite of fear, anxiety, and depression. Because as we like to say, though there's pain in the night, gozo comes in the morning.